to their website under our business sponsors. Just go to WTRJTheTruth.com.
Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is away for the day, and it is my honor and pleasure to be able to host a show for him today, Let's Face the Issues. I'm out of the Pensacola area. I served in the Florida House for five sessions. I'm a small business owner. I've owned an insurance and financial services agency for 33 years now. Prior to that, I was active duty Air Force after graduating from the Air Force Academy. So it's my pleasure to be hosting the show today. We're going to be discussing many different issues that are relevant to us today and how we as Christians should respond to those tasks that are before us, to what is happening around us on a daily basis, not only here in Florida, but around our nation. If you would like to join us, the call-in number is 904-831-0917. Again, that's 904-831-0917. For those of you in the Jacksonville area, of course, the big news is that you now have a new mayor, Donna Deegan, who beat out Daniel Davis last night in a race. It was relatively close, but I will admit I was surprised that the Democrat was able to beat Daniel Davis. I served with Daniel Davis for one term in the Florida House, and I admired him then. He was a principled conservative. He was consistent, and I found him as a good House member. I thought he would have also have been a good mayor for Jacksonville, but apparently, even though Republicans had a higher voter turnout and higher number of registered voters, enough independents voted with the Democrats and were able to pull the race out for the Democrat mayor, who is, by the way, the first female mayor of Jacksonville. That shouldn't matter one way or the other. The first female, first Black, first Hispanic, it doesn't matter. What matters is how are you going to govern now? Are you going to govern from a constitutional perspective or from another perspective on this? And it looks like we have a caller who has called in. Yes, who has joined us on the line, please?
This is Derby.
Hello, Derby. How are you today?
Doing fine. I'd like to comment on last night's election. I have listened to a lot of the political commentators and the websites, and they give a lot of reasons for the results, but none have mentioned these points. Number one, many well-informed and conservative Republicans could not force themselves to vote for corrupt Daniel Davis. So some of them voted for Deegan, some did not vote for mayor, and some stayed home. That is why Deegan got elected. The lack of support from real Republicans.
Now, Derby, let me interrupt you there and ask you a question. You use a term characterizing Daniel Davis as corrupt. Why would you use that term?
Hello?
Derby, yes, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can. Not too well. I guess you're calling from Pensacola.
Yes, Derby, I was asking, why did you use the term corrupt for Daniel Davis?
Daniel Davis used lies and character assassination against Al Ferraro and lots of money to get elected. He's part of the Republican establishment that is no different from the Democrat establishment.
I see.
So they win because they have lots of money, and they can lie, and nobody holds them accountable.
So, Derby, your contention is that the reason why Daniel Davis lost is because not enough Republicans wanted to vote for him because of his corruption. Is that correct?
Yes. And then I have some other points to make about the other races. For example, we have for a property appraiser, what's his name?
Jason Fisher.
Jason Fisher lost to the Democrat, even though he was endorsed by the governor. Well, it doesn't speak too well of the governor that he endorses somebody and then that somebody loses the election. Just like endorsing Davis. The governor endorsed Davis and Davis loses. Another race, District 7 in Jacksonville, Joseph Hogan, he lost to a Democrat. And Joseph Hogan is the son of the current supervisor of elections, Mike Hogan, who's supposed to be a Republican. Well, it doesn't speak too highly of Mike Hogan. His son lost by the largest percentage. He only got 35% to 36% of the vote, and the Democrat got most of it. Another District 8, which is my district. There were two Democrats, and the Democrat that won was endorsed by three Republicans. I mean, what are Republicans doing endorsing any Democrat?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Well,
not at all.
So the bottom line is that Dean Black, current chairman of the Duval County REC, he failed to elect a Republican. He should resign. And being endorsed by DeSantis didn't help. And the way to get elected in Jacksonville is to simply lie and lie, trash the opponent with lies, and have lots of money. And that secures your election. Mm-hmm. That is how Davis got the nomination. Last night I went to Mike Gay's victory party. He is the running for city council to replace Al Ferraro, and that was the best victory party ever. And Mike Gay is a real Christian, a real conservative, very knowledgeable and very intelligent. So at least we have Mike Gay on city council. And 4 years from now is going to be a fight to get rid of Donna Deegan, which will be easier than getting rid of an establishment Republican like Daniel Davis.
Well, Derby, thank you so much for your comments. Thank you for calling in. You've added a lot of insight. We have another caller on the line. Kenneth. Kenneth, what are your comments or questions?
Yes. Good morning. Hello.
Hello. Yes. You're on the air now.
Yes. I disagree with everything that he said. Can you hear me?
Okay. Why?
Okay. But I don't know if people remember when the Revolutionary War started. They had it was like the Democrats in the South, Republicans in the North. Okay. Republicans wanted to free slaves, but the Democrats didn't want to lose their money. But it was sad there in Jacksonville. And one more question. I do not understand why the Biden family is not being accused, like the IRS don't want to do anything with Hunter Biden, the FBI, CIA, all of them. It's like they're just hiding stuff, and it's sad.
Well, Kenneth, I think I can answer why nothing is being done or doesn't appear to be done to the Biden family. And that's because we have a corrupt FBI, a corrupt Department of Justice. We have a corrupt regime in office right now. If there was any justice, if there was any way at all that righteousness should be done, an investigation should be started into the Biden administration, into the Biden family, because enough information has come out to show that they are corrupt to the core. Kenneth, thank you for calling in. We appreciate you joining the show and hope you have a great day. Now, some other issues that I'd like to talk about, which has happened recently with the close of the election, not the election, the legislative session that we had here in Florida, and Governor DeSantis signing a number of bills into law. One in particular is what has been called the heartbeat bill, or a bill that once the heartbeat has been detected, which is about they're saying it's a 6-week period. It can actually happen as early as 18 days. But this bill says 6 weeks, once the baby in the womb is 6 weeks old, then an abortion cannot be performed. Now, I applaud the Florida legislature for shortening that time period. At one point, we were at 24 weeks, then it went down to 15 weeks, now it's down to 6 weeks. I would like to see it down to the moment of conception. And we have also seen a reaction on the other side right now. Those on the left, the Democrats, who want to murder the baby in the womb, and we see that Planned Parenthood and ACLU are funding a measure to try and get it on the ballot to where next year, 2024, where the voters will decide if abortion on demand is going to be the law of the land in Florida. And it's utterly amazing that they have already spent, or let me say this, they've already gathered millions of dollars towards this effort to get it on the ballot. And here to join in the discussion now is my good friend, Mark Mink. Mark runs the Human Protection Life Amendment, whose purpose is to have an amendment on the Constitution that voters can vote for, that instead of killing the preborn in the womb, that it protects them by a state law. And that is what I'm hoping and praying will get passed. And Mark, are you there? Can you hear us now?
I am. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Mark. Thank you for joining the show. Mark, first of all, I would like to ask you about what you are doing, the Human Protection Life Amendment. What is that all about?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show today, and I appreciate the opportunity to share with your listeners. Our Human Life Protection Amendment initiative is a citizen effort to amend the Florida Constitution to recognize the God-given right to life of every preborn child in the state of Florida. And it really comes about with the recognition that our governing document, the Florida Constitution, which was ratified in 1968, does not have a single word anywhere in it that speaks to the protection of preborn life or the life of the preborn human in the womb. Now, there are 34 references to the word life in the Florida Constitution. 21 of them deal specifically with wildlife. And then there are references to the life of an amendment or already born human life, but there's no reference to the preborn. And we think that's a problem. Interestingly, there are 12 references to pigs in the Florida Constitution because 21 years ago, the Florida voters approved the what was kind of nicknamed the Pregnant Pig Amendment. So we've got 12 references to pigs, 21 references to wildlife, zero references to preborn human life. And so our effort seeks to rectify that deficiency in our Constitution by placing our proposed amendment in front of Florida voters, giving them the opportunity to approve our proposed language, which would add a new section to Article 1, which is where basic rights are listed, and would then provide a constitutional wall of protection around the preborn. So that's it in a nutshell. I know we're going to talk about some more things, but I wanted to kind of frame it with that.
Well, that was great. Great introduction, Mark. And the reason why this is necessary or has become even more necessary is the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, which, by the way, did not end abortion. Instead, what it did was it sent it back to the states and said the states will decide now on the subject of murdering the baby in the womb, which to me is unfathomable anyway. Why would you give something that goes against a God-given right the ability for people to vote on whether or not you're going to have it in your state? Why do you have to wait until the Florida Supreme Court justices decide whether or not it's legal or illegal to murder someone in the womb? Murder is murder. It's illegal. It goes against the laws of nature and of nature's God. It should not even have to be discussed. It should not even have to have a constitutional amendment, even though I applaud what you're doing, Mark, because when you look at just how the law is being written and enforced and managed today, it has to be done. But it should not have to be. We have elected officials, including those who are on the Supreme Court and those who occupy public office, must say an oath of office. And that oath of office says that they solemnly swear to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Florida Constitution. And inextricably tied to our Constitution, Mark, is our Declaration of Independence. You cannot separate the two. And our Declaration of Independence says that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, God-given rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life being the very first one. It's a God-given right. It's one of the rights that is inherent, that everyone should be able to recognize that you have a right to life, not because government says so, but because God says so. And so, Mark, what you are doing is you are going to make sure that our Florida Constitution lives up to that protection of life with this Human Protection Life Amendment. Now, basically, what does the amendment say, Mark?
Well, the amendment is brief, and that's intentional. There's two parts to this for those listening. There's what's called the ballot summary, and then there's what's referred to as the full text. Without getting too technical, the State of Florida Division of Election really kind of dictates how this works. And so when Florida voters go to the ballot box, should we qualify for ballot placement, they will actually see the ballot summary, which is a summary of the proposed amendment, and it has to be 75 words or less. It has to have a title that's 15 words or less. So the ballot title that they'll see on the ballot, again, assuming that we qualify for ballot placement by turning in the required number of signed and validated petitions, is Human Life Protection Amendment. And then the ballot summary just reads as follows: an amendment recognizing the God-given right to life of the pre-born individual. Defines pre-born individual as a pre-born human person at any stage of development. Affirms that life-saving procedures to save the life of the mother shall not be construed as a violation when accompanied by reasonable steps to save the life of the pre-born individual. To be added to the Declaration of Rights under Article 1 of the Florida Constitution. So that is the summary of the proposal. And it essentially, as we mentioned earlier, as I shared earlier, is an effort to recognize that the right to life of a preborn human is a God-given right, as you mentioned, as recognized in our Declaration of Independence. And I'll even go back and suggest that the United States Supreme Court missed a golden opportunity. You know, there's always so much effort on overturning Roe, but in reality, what the United States Supreme Court had the opportunity to do was to recognize the preborn as human and thus protected by the United States Constitution. Because even in the arguments in 1973, there was discussion that if the personhood of what they referred to as the fetus could ever be established, Roe would fall apart. And so, you know, if you look at this kind of from a timeline perspective, had the United States Supreme Court overturned Roe in 1975 or 1977, and had it only been in place for a number of years, perhaps they could have simply overturned it and things would not be so, as confusing as they are now. But with it being around for 50 years, you know, you've got entire generations of men and women alike who just grew up and that's all they knew. You know, for example, you mentioned the state Florida legislature having passed this Heartbeat Protection Act. Well, most of the state legislature, a good number of lawmakers, including our governor, weren't even born yet when Roe had been decided. So you've got generations of lawmakers, generations of judges who that's all they've ever known.
Let's talk a little bit about the law that was recently signed by Governor DeSantis, which was passed in the Florida legislature, which they say will protect the preborn up to 6 weeks. Basically, what does that bill say? What does that law say?
That bill basically moves, as you mentioned earlier, moves the bar, so to speak, from 15 weeks gestation to 6 weeks. It actually didn't have heartbeat anywhere in the language initially. That was an amendment that was filed toward the end that I think kind of give it maybe a little more understanding just by people trying to understand what the bill does. But it originally did not have the word heartbeat in it. So it centers around 6 weeks gestation, but then it has kind of the full traditional suite of exceptions, one of which says that bar can move to 15 weeks in cases of rape or incest. And then it moves up to, I believe, 27 weeks for what would be referred to as a fatal fetal abnormality. So if the preborn human unfortunately has some sort of congenital defect that is probably going to result in the death of that preborn baby, that law allows for the termination of that human life farther down the gestational stage. And so, as you mentioned, it is progress from the standpoint that they're doing more legislatively. I think you and I would both be in agreement that we'd like to see them take the majorities that they have in the House and the Senate and the overwhelming victory that Governor DeSantis had, see them protect all preborn human life. But they're at least moving in the right direction. I think what's important to understand, though, is that our proposed amendment does not have to go through any Senate or House subcommittees. It doesn't need the approval or the blessing of the Senate president or the House speaker. It doesn't need the vote or the signature, rather, of the governor. It circumvents that process. Florida is one of 18 states that has a provision where citizens can propose amendments That's how we got the Pregnant Pig Amendment in 2002. A citizen group thought that pregnant pigs needed protection, and right. so they put the issue before the voters.
Mark,
so
let me
that's
ask
where we
you
are
this.
Today with our issue.
Florida has become a destination state for abortion because we seem to have had, before this bill was passed, our abortion laws were not as stringent as some of the bordering states. And so we had grown to having around 84,000 babies a year murdered right here in Florida. And correct me if I'm wrong, but this now six-week protection bill will essentially cut that in half. But we're still talking over 40,000 babies being murdered in Florida. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I think that's an important point that most pro-life Floridians are not aware of, because they've kind of bought the narrative that, oh, it's 6 weeks, a woman doesn't even know she's pregnant. But there's data from the Agency for Healthcare Administration and Charlotte Lozier Institute and the CDC that indicate otherwise. It indicates that last year in Florida, of the more than 82,000 abortions reported by the Agency for Healthcare Administration, that at least 40,000 of those were performed at or before 6 weeks gestation. So our effort seeks to rescue the rest, so to speak. But it's also really important to understand what you mentioned earlier. This is critically important for your listeners to understand, that we can wrangle over what the legislature should do and shouldn't do, and what they might do and what they might not do in the future. But this pro-abortion amendment that has just come on the scene is a clear and present danger. As you mentioned, they raised $1.8 million in 3 days of reporting. They have the backing of Planned Parenthood and the ACLU and some other groups. They are going to spend as much money as it takes to qualify for ballot placement. They're going to utilize both paid petition gatherers and volunteers. They have 10 months left to accomplish their objective of qualifying for ballot placement. And I think it's pretty clear that they, unless they just really mess something up strategically, I think they'll qualify and they'll end up on the ballot. So your listeners need to make this decision. If you're listening to my voice right now and you consider yourself a pro-life Floridian, then you need to move away from the discussion of, well, I don't know if I could support this human life protection amendment. I think it's too extreme because I think we should have exceptions for this or that or the other. I think we should draw the line at a certain gestational age. That's not the discussion to have right now. The discussion to have is, what will happen if this pro-abortion amendment qualifies for ballot placement and is approved by Florida voters? Because what it will effectively do is it will nullify the Heartbeat Protection Act. It will nullify the 15-week ban from last year. It will tie the hands of our legislature from ever doing more to protect the pre-born in Florida. It will allow pre-born children to be killed in their mother's wombs up to 24 weeks gestation for any reason. And it's not stated 24 weeks in the language. It's stated at the point of viability. And we know that technology is making that happen earlier and earlier, but it's around 22, 23, 24 weeks right now. So it's basically the first two trimesters of pregnancy. It will be open season on the preborn, and then it allows abortion.
We have less than a minute now. Tell the listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can support your Human Protection Life Amendment.
Here's what everyone needs to do. Go to our website. It's Human Life, FL for Florida, humanlifefl.com. On that site, all the information about our initiative is clear. Their petition is there. A way to complete the petition, sign it, and send it in is clear. Access to the full text of our proposed amendment. There's a frequently asked questions section. There's a tab for churches and how they can get involved. There are links to articles written about the initiative and videos that we have. There's
Mark,
lots of
thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We're at a hard break right now. But folks, go to the Human Protection Life Amendment.
Conservative Baptist Church and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. He is answering the call. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis responding to Texas Governor Greg Abbott's appeal for other states to help out on the border. DeSantis is sending law enforcement and National Guard personnel to Texas, along with equipment including planes and boats. With the deadline for a potential government default just a few weeks off, there's word of some progress in debt ceiling talks that have been taking place at the White House. Later today, President Biden will depart for Japan and the G7 summit. He is cutting the trip short, though, in order to deal with the debt ceiling impasse here at home. North Carolina's Republican-led General Assembly has overridden Democrat Governor Roy Cooper's veto of a bill that bans most abortions in the state after 12 weeks of pregnancy. On Wall Street, stocks trading higher. More details at srnnews.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill. I have the honor and pleasure of sitting in for Dr. Youngblood, who was away for the day. I'm calling from Pensacola, Florida. First half of the hour, we had some good discussion about elections and about a pro-life amendment that is so important that we protect the preborn in the womb and not allow this insanity, which is, I can't think of any other word to describe it, of this willingness of mothers who want to kill their preborn baby in their womb. I just don't understand it. There is something evil, demonic behind that, to where they will go out to the streets and yell and scream about a right to kill a human being that is inside of them. And they make the nonsensical point that it's my body, my choice. No, that's a completely different body. It's a completely different DNA. It's a unique individual made in the image of God and deserves protection. And that is what we should do. And so please support the Human Protection Life Amendment that my friend Mark Mink and others are working on, so that we can have on the ballot next year a constitutional amendment to protect life in Florida, as it should be, to push back against this demonic horde. Okay, changing topics just a bit here. It's been noted that Biden's open borders are essentially an invasion right now into the U.S. There are people coming here from many different countries all over the world who are crossing our southern border right now as we speak, that since Biden has been in office, 6 million people have entered into the United States, the vast majority of them illegally. But here's something that a lot of people are not aware of, is that the illegal alien tracking map shows movement of the masses of illegals across the U.S. So in other words, as these people are coming across the border, they're given these cell phones, and they are able to track where they are going. Here's what should be eye-opening to everyone, is that 71% of these illegals end up in Republican districts. Now, do you think that's accidental, or do you think that's intentional? To me, it sounds intentional. 71% are adding up, are going into Republican districts. And that is what makes it so important that we have election integrity. Because if these people are going to Republican districts, it is for two reasons. One, the Republican districts are well governed and have the finances to be able to support them. But number two, is so that they can flip those Republican districts to Democrat and then start receiving all the government handouts that Democrats like to do and will essentially destroy a district, destroy a city, destroy a state. Look at California, my goodness. And so it is so important that we do have election integrity, and we do have a caller on the line right now. Yes, caller, what is your thoughts or your comments, please?
Hey. You hear me?
Hello? Hello, caller, are you there?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, this John,
okay,
right?
I'm having a hard time hearing you as well. But my question is, how come McCarthy's saying this and Biden's saying this. Why don't they do like Trump did it back with Pelosi and Schumer and just televise it on the air, and then we can see exactly who's blocking it up and who's trying to get it to pass through?
And what are you referring to, John?
Sir?
What are you referring to? Show what?
The debt ceiling.
Oh, the debt ceiling. Yeah,
yes, sir.
You went on a completely different topic, John.
Yeah, back in the day, remember when Trump had Pelosi and Schumer on and they were talking about the closing the government down and everything? It was televised, so why can't Joe Biden and McCarthy come on the air and go at it and see what we can establish that way, so the whole United States can see where the glitch is actually at?
Well, that would be optimum, John. You're right. We should have transparency in our government, and we should have the ability to see what increasing the debt will actually do, what stopping this increase of the debt, which is what the Republicans are trying to do, but they will allow it as long as there are spending reductions, which is so desperately needed. John, thank you for the call. We absolutely need to have transparency in our government so we can see how our money, by the way, that's our money, how our money is being spent. Now, as I was mentioning, we are seeing this invasion right now across our borders, coming from our southern borders. Actually, they're coming in from Canada, too. But we're seeing an invasion of our nation by mostly military-age males who are coming into our nation from all over the world. And we are finding that by tracking them, that 71% of them are going to Republican-controlled areas. And that's why it's going to be so important that we have election integrity across our nation, but specifically in the United States. And I have a caller on the line with us now, a good friend of mine, Raj. Raj, have you heard about this invasion and how they are tracking them, and they are able to find out that 71% of them are going to Republican-controlled areas?
Hi, Mike. Yeah, thanks for having me on. And your comments about election integrity are right on. So with regard to the people that are coming in this country, as you know, I also came into this country, except I just came in legally. I had to get a visa. I had to apply for citizenship. I had to apply for residency, and I did that. And so we are all for people coming into this country. I came in from Africa. But like any other nation on the planet, you have to come in the right way. We are unique in that we are just allowing anyone to come in to this country. Other countries don't do that. With regard to the movement that you mentioned of 71% going to Republican locations, I did not know that. However, this, Mike, is really underscoring how we in Florida have got to do a better job than we're doing right now on election integrity. And I had some comments, Mike. I don't know if this is a good time to mention, to talk about the Senate Bill 7050 that got passed just 10 days ago, actually a little over 10 days ago, about 2 weeks ago, that has dramatically changed election integrity in Florida for the worse. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or later.
Yes. Now, Raj, and please forgive me if I mispronounce your last name, Raj Doraswamy, is that correct?
Yeah, very good. Raj Doraswamy.
Doraswamy is a member of an organization called Defend Florida, which I am also proud to say that I'm a member of. And our whole purpose is to protect election integrity in Florida. Now, as you mentioned, Raj, that recently we had a bill passed in the Florida legislature, which they are touting as strengthening our election integrity in Florida, and is now coming forward for Governor DeSantis' signature. Raj, what is your, please describe the bill, give us your impression of it, and then what action should listeners take concerning this bill?
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mike. So first, to be clear, there are some improvements for election integrity in this bill. So let's get those out of the way first. The many improvements, I'll mention three on this phone call here. And the first one is there's now better training available to our election officials on signature verification. Number two, there is now a little bit more interdepartmental collaboration between DMV, highway, and the Secretary of State. Number three, there are stiffer penalties for crimes, election integrity crimes. So these are three examples of some of the good things that are in this bill. So then if you're listening to this radio, you might be asking, well, Raj, why are you making a fuss about this bill? It seems like it's a good thing. And so the reason I'm on this call with you, Mike, is while those items are there, there are some significant drawbacks, overwhelmingly significant drawbacks, and I'd like to share my opinion on those. I'm, again, a volunteer. I'm not a legislator. I'm not an attorney. I'm just a Floridian like you. And when I look at this bill, Mike, what I'm noticing is there are now barriers to citizen involvement in the election process. So what do I mean by that specifically? Well, as you mentioned, Mike, last year, volunteers all over the state, 32 counties, had volunteers going and gathering information about our voter rolls. And so they gathered the information over 32 counties. They took that information and they presented it to our election officials. Now, our election officials are not obligated to act on the information we provided, and that we acknowledge that. That is their judgment call, whether or not to act on the information provided. The important thing, though, is volunteers all over Florida were able to do that. Now, why did I bring that up? Why I brought that up is on this bill, and I'll use a Senate bill, and I'll give a line number for those who are taking notes. In line number 1105 of this bill that has now passed, now someone has added the following two terms, two pieces of language. One, that governmental entities, so if you're not a governmental entity, obviously we're volunteers, we're not governmental entities. If you're not a governmental entity, there's now a barrier with regard to participating in the way we did last year. So all of those, all that work we did, all that information gathered, now because we're not a governmental entity, it becomes difficult for us to have that information considered. Number two,
okay, they've also added. Raj, if I may, please. That is a huge point. So last year, as you say, many volunteers across the state gathered information showing that there were anomalies such as those who should not be voting. Either they we did to clean up our voter rolls. Either they didn't live where they say they lived, or the addresses were wrong, or they had passed away, or whatever. But to clean up those voter rolls, and volunteers, yourself included, all across the state, gathered this information and brought it before their supervisor of elections. Are you saying that this bill would prevent them from presenting that information now, or for it being considered by the supervisor of elections?
This is what this bill does. So last year, the supervisor of elections were able to get information, and this is the law, this is how the law was written. Based upon information from other sources, meaning we as volunteers, we gathered information, we went to our supervisor of elections, and the law said the supervisors could look at information from other sources. They could make decisions on information from other sources. So that's a very good piece of law. It makes it easy for us to do what you just did. Now, and I'll just read it exactly, act upon direct receipt of access or knowledge of official information from these and other governmental entities. So the addition of governmental entities and official information now create barriers. Now, does this prevent volunteers from providing information? The way this bill is written, some people are going to interpret it as, yes, it does. Some people are going to say, you're not a governmental entity, you're not using official information, and they're going to interpret it that way. And in those locations where that's how it's interpreted, those volunteers are shut out. Others are going to take a different approach. This is a very clever way of adding confusion in an area where there was none, and it's language here, either intentional or unintentional, that now creates barriers and confusion where there was none before. Now, Mike, the thing that I that's important for your audience to know is we had Floridians go to Tallahassee and meet with legislators. Just the team that I'm aware of, that I was part of, we went to over 30 offices, 30 in Tallahassee. This does not include the other teams that also went there. This was brought up. This whole issue was brought up. So in the event that maybe there was some confusion, it was an unintentional, okay, I get it. The thing, though, is our legislators were informed of this issue, and we even had some legislators listen to what we were saying. We even had them, at our request, they filed amendments to reflect our concerns. But after their amendments were filed, those same legislators were told to withdraw them. Let me explain what that means a little bit. As a bill is written, a bill is essentially a document that eventually becomes a law. As a bill is written, there's opportunity for debate. There's opportunity for committees to weigh in. and say, yes, we like this. No, we don't that. We need to add this. We need to remove this. And there's opportunity for Floridians to participate through their legislators in these discussions. And this is the way it should be. And that's what Floridians did. And there were amendments that were submitted that said, hey, we've got a concern about this bill in this one area. We'd like the language changed from this to that. So that was done. However, the thing that I need your audience to know is someone higher up the organization told those legislators, hey, those amendments that you filed, that you know your constituents asked you to submit, we want you to withdraw them. We don't want these items debated. We don't want them argued. We don't want to discuss. We need you to withdraw them. So this is the other side of this coin, Mike, where here in the free state of Florida, where we have historically been moving towards more and more election transparency, our governor last year was amazing in what he worked with Floridians in accomplishing with Senate Bill 524. But this year, somehow, suddenly, all of that is changing. I want to mention one other example. I've spent a fair amount of time on this one piece here, but I want to mention one other example. And for those that are interested in terms of actions you can take, if this is of interest to you, then my request of you is you as an individual, please, I'm requesting you, you should get yourself acquainted with this bill. And an easy way to do that is if you go to defendflorida.org, you will see a link to the bill so you can read it for yourself, make your own conclusions. You can discuss it with your own legislator. We also have a link to a list of concerns, and that's a document I'm reading right now. You can get that as well. And there's also training on that same page on how you can have very respectful, professional, thoughtful conversations with your officials. But, Mike, may I mention one other item here for your listeners' consideration?
Yes, Raj. And before we run out of time, please, I want to make sure to tell the audience what action you want them to do next, because this bill has not become law yet, not until the governor signs it into law. So, yes, mention your point, and then what next step should be taken, Raj?
Okay, very good. Very good. Thank you. So if you go to defendflorida.org, if you click on the list of concerns, you'll see 7 items for your review. Look at the 6th one. That's what I'm looking at right now. I'm reading to you right now. And in the 6th one, there was a piece of language in our law, my friends. And in this particular language, our legislation was required to review a particular aspect of how Florida elections were managed. There's no time right now on this call to get into it. If you go to the website I mentioned earlier, you can look at it. The thing that I want to mention to you is our law in Florida required our legislators to review this a particular piece of legislation of election technology. In this bill that we're talking about right now, that mandatory review has been removed. So I'll say it a different way. So in Florida, we have election processes. Our law required our legislators to review a particular piece of that election process. This is good. They look at it, they review it, they make sure this still serves Florida, this is still good for the citizens of Florida. They have a chance to look at it. That requirement for them to make that review has been removed in this bill. And that's going to be in line 667 for those of you taking notes. Line 667. So, actions.
Ron, why do you think that was removed? What was the impetus behind that?
So it's I don't know, Mike. I the thing that happens when we speak with our legislators. Remember, this is a 98-page bill. The bill, regrettably, was dropped very much at the last minute. As volunteers, they spend all night, literally spend all night reading the bill, analyzing it, trying to understand what the intent is. Another amendment, a version is dropped. So now we've got to read through it again. This is a tactic. You know, you drop a huge bill, you make changes at the very last minute, and it is difficult. And when we speak to legislators we spoke with had not had a chance because of what I described, to get into the nitty-gritty of this bill. I will say that I will say the following. There were three people that contributed to this bill. One is Secretary of State, Cord Byrd, which he has done a lot for the state of Florida from everything I've seen for election integrity. So that's Secretary Byrd. The second group was from our legislators, a few of the legislators that wrote this. The third group, and this is a group that it appears has had the most influence on this bill, and the third group is an entity called the Florida Supervisor of Elections. They have a lobbyist, and that lobbyist has a lot of influence with legislators, and it would appear that a lot of the issues that we are have a concern with came from that entity. Now, nowhere in the three sources I mentioned, Secretary of State, the legislators, and the Florida Supervisor Elections, nowhere in there have they acknowledged that language came from the citizens. Said another way, we've had teams working with Tallahassee with requests of what they would like in election integrity, and their concerns have not been considered. So to kind of bring this to full circle, the actions, so this is the important part. So if you are listening to this broadcast and you live in the state of Florida, the first thing is please make sure you understand what's in this bill. You don't have, if you can't read, ideally read the entire thing, it's 98 pages. If that is not practical for you, at least read the concerns. All of that's at defendflorida.org. You can click the link, it's right there. The concerns is only 7 pages, so you can get through that. The next thing is on that same page, there is video trainings, very short video trainings on how to have professional, respectful, productive meetings with your legislator. Third, please contact your legislator in your district. This is the key. So me talking to a legislator in Miami-Dade or Hillsborough, that's not as effective.
Raj. The bill has not become law yet until the governor signs it. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the governor has not signed it yet. And it would be dangerous, I believe, and hearing what you're saying, to have this bill actually become law. The audience should be contacting Governor DeSantis' office and ask him to veto this bill. Would you agree with that?
So that's a very good question, Mike. So here's the thing about this bill. This bill also includes the provision for the governor to run for federal office without resigning. So you've probably heard, if you're listening to Mike Hill, you're probably aware that there's been an interest from our governor's end to run for president. And he has been, the thinking is the law needs to be changed in order to allow him to do that. Some people say the law doesn't have to change. Some people say it does. Regardless, this bill has that language in it. So if we do the math, is the governor likely to veto this bill since this bill has that provision in it? So while, Mike, what you said is accurate, from a practical standpoint, would the governor veto the bill when this bill has the language for him to run for president? This is going to be a decision that the governor is going to have to make. Now, the audience listening to this, you should make your wishes known about this matter to the governor. The thing, though, I also want you to do is there's that aspect, which we just talked about.
Raj, I'm sorry. We're coming up on a hard break here at the end of the hour. Thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it so much. A lot of great information. Those who were listening earlier, go to humanlifefl.com about the abortion issue. Thank you. This is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood on Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Remember, don't be afraid. Look up and see that your redemption draweth nigh. Thank you so much for listening today.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for